section of verses that go from 29 to 49. It's 21 verses that was supposed to start Thursday morning and end Saturday evening. But you're such a good group that we're not only going to finish 49 this morning, but we're going to go on to the next two verses so that we can take a longer time with the remaining verses from 50 to 63. Okay, so quickly, especially for Devaki's refresher of what we've done so far, this whole time together this weekend is discussing the Pramaya Khanda section of Tattva Sandarbha. Pramaya means those truths about Krishna that we can understand from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, the first section is Pramana Khanda. Pramana means evidence or valid source of knowledge, specifically valid source of knowledge about transcendence, meaning the senses cannot enter into transcendence, the mind cannot enter into transcendence, rather it has to be descending knowledge from a source that's beyond human fallibility. And the senses are imperfect and the mind is imperfect. Speculation can't get you to transcendence. It has to be descending. So, aparusheya, or beyond human fallibility, source of knowledge is needed if you want to know transcendence. And Pramanakanda says the Vedas is such a source of knowledge amongst the Vedas. Short version, Srimad Bhagavatam is the best. So, Jiva Goswami has established for us, and we agreed with him, that we're not going to go revisit what's the best way of knowing about Krishna or transcendence. It's the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the Supreme Court. Final authority on the subject of Krishna. So then, Pramaya asks the question, what is it about Krishna that the Srimad Bhagavatam reveals? What is its message? What are the various aspects of Krishna that the Srimad Bhagavatam reveals? That's this whole long section, verse 29 to 63. And that's divided into three parts. The first part is, well, if we can understand the heart of Shukadeva Goswami and the heart of Vyasadeva, then we'll understand the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the message is what's in their heart. So we're nearly finished with that section. And it's been, you know, a little vigorous, especially the Vyasadeva's realization and the application of that realization to what Shankaracharya says, which we just found the nearest dustbin and put it over there. But, you know, with detail, not out of sentiment, based on Vyasa's realization and Shukadeva's realization, which is the foundation for what Srimad Bhagavatam is. We've been over this so many times. The largest section of that first part was 29 to 33, which was the realization. And then 34 to 49 was, no, excuse me, 34 to 43 was the application of that to Shukadeva Goswami, to Shankaracharya's Mayavad teaching. And then this last section is Abhideya and Prayojana. So Sambandha, relationship. He saw, Vyasa saw Krishna. And we've been hearing. He saw the original form of Krishna. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Because there's other features of Krishna. That's what he saw. He saw the fullness of Krishna. Which means he saw Radharani, he saw the whole spiritual world. And Sambandha. He saw the living entity, he saw time, he saw the external energy, he saw the he saw everything, Sambandha, in their relationship with the source. Then he saw Abhideya, when the living entity acts in that relationship. What does it look like? What is that Abhideya, the means of achieving Prayojan, the goal? And we heard a lot about the goal. Love of God. Being attached. Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, mind attached to him, intelligence fully engaged in him, perfection. Chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. Perfection. And the means to get there. Vyasadeva knew the means to get there. He was very kind, and he provided the means to get there. How did he do that? He compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. And he taught it. He taught it to his students. He taught it to Shukadeva Goswami in particular. Shukadeva Goswami taught it to Maharaj Prikshit. Sutta in the audience heard it. He taught it to the sages. And Vyas then provided us with this particular version of Srimad Bhagavatam that we have on the back shelf back there. Or in the bookstore or the BBT warehouse or in translations all over the world by that mercy of Vyas and the realization of Vyas. So we have just two verses left in that section. And it's kind of, you know, appropriately, it's just wrapping up the whole picture. It's not so much introducing something new, that's why it's easy. It's just kind of summarizing everything and putting a bow and ribbon and here's the gift. So the exercise again is, what is the message of this Srimad Bhagavatam that we've already accepted as the primary source of knowledge about Krishna? What's its message? Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Then the next section, which we're going to begin shortly, goes from text 50 to 55. And there's many parts to it, but the theme is to understand the ocean, take a drop of water from the ocean, and you can understand the makeup of the ocean. You have that example that Prabhupada has given. It's understand the living entity, the consciousness. Remember we heard this? The living entity is both conscious and consciousness. So the consciousness of the living entity tells us, and we study that, you know, with Jiva Goswami's help, and then we can understand Krishna. By the part, you can understand the whole. And it works the other way. By understanding the whole, you can understand. Sorry, but there's a Sanskrit term that goes with all of this. Vyasti and samasti. It's not so hard. Vyasti means understand the part gives you an indication of the quality of the whole. Samasti is you understand the whole and it gives you an indication of the quality of the part. It's important specifically in this whole idea that the living entities are, we'll step back. Bhagavad Gita introduction. Srila Prabhupada makes reference to Baladev Vidyabhusan, who says, there's five topics in Bhagavad Gita. Four of them are eternal and one of them is temporary. The temporary one is karma. And the four that are eternal, it's also elements that Vyasadeva saw in his trance of realization. Vyasa's composition of Srimad Bhagavatam and his realization has five topics, and Vyasa saw them all. So, of those five topics, there's the living entity and Ishvara, and they're eternal. They're not Brahman covered by Maya or Upadis. They're eternal existences, the living entity, the Jiva, and the Supreme. They're eternal. And they're both conscious. I'm just giving you, you know, before you get on the train, a few stops down the road, where it's headed. So there's a description from another very important verse of the Bhagavatam. Vedanta tat tattva vedas tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabhyate. It says the non-dual transcendence, because that's the topic, it's transcendence, Krishna. Krishna is non-dual and yet has different features or aspects. And all three are Advaya Gyan. Advaya Gyan. We're going to repeat this in, you know, in about an hour, but I'm giving you, you know, coming attractions. So, Advaya Gyan means non-dual knowledge. He takes it, knowledge indicates consciousness. Consciousness. Different than what the Mayavadis say. They say there's no such thing. Consciousness. All there is Brahman, and Brahman is conscious. But consciousness means you're conscious of something. That means two things. The conscious entity and the thing that he's conscious of. You can't have that if you're Mayavadi. So you don't have consciousness. You just have conscious. Put the living entity in a straitjacket. No consciousness. Just conscious. So knowledge indicates consciousness, non-dual consciousness. And so as Samasti, as the Supreme has consciousness, the living entity has consciousness. Samasti. From the ocean you can understand something of the drop. Then he goes the other way. From the drop you can understand something of the ocean. And it's a standard procedure in Sanskrit. And I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but I've understood this from those that are Sanskrit scholars. It's a standard procedure. If you want to understand something, there's the Samasti method and there's the Vyasti method, and it's standard procedure. So for us, it's like, whoa, it's another terminology. I get circuit overload already. But for his audience, it's standard stuff. In your handout, little package, you'll find the three verses that he refers to in this section 50 to 55. So, when there's a break, if you want, you can take a look at what's in your handout. It's the Canto 11, Chapter 2, Text 18, 19, 20. So what I did was I took the BBT, translation, and then I added Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, translation and commentary. If you like, you can look that over, because that's where the train's going. Those of you that are Maharatis and you're still on board. And in case you're curious, the final section, verses 56 through 63, deals with, if you want to know what the subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami lists, there's 10 topics in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then and that's Canto 2, Chapter 10, first series of verses. And then again, at the end, 12th canto, Sutta, gives it a list of 10. topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the special position of Krishna, who is Ashraya, in relation to the other nine. He's the shelter of the other nine. And then we're done. So that's the three ways or lenses through which Jiva Goswami is helping his audience, us, understand, or the scholars that he's addressing, what's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam through these three lenses. The realization of Shuka and Vyas, the Samasti Vyasti, the big, to understand the Jiva to understand the big, and they match. And then the ten topics of the Bhagavatam and the special position of the Ashraya of them all. Krishna. Krishna Tattva. Therefore, Tattva Sandarbha. Okay. If you think this is rigorous, please understand, this is just like bricks and mortar, and then he's going to build a building with the bricks and mortar. He's going to take the other five sandarbhas and take pieces from tattva and make a house, and then make a skyscraper, and then make, you know, a city, make a whole universe. So it's important to get, you know, the bricks and the mortar clear. What are the elements that make up the message of Srimad Bhagavatam? And then he's going to fill out the whole picture. Okay. You're still with me. It's really nice. Thank you. So we ended up with the just refresher or review. We heard Jiva Goswami say, on this stage of perfection, the prayojana, the love of God position, just hearing the syllables, Krishna becomes attracted. His mind goes to that person who calls Krish. They don't even have to say the other part. Na. And then the mind of the person who is on that stage, when they call Krishna, Krishna fills their mind. It's a relationship of love. Or here's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and their whole consciousness runs Krishna. Just like we narrated this Pundarik Vidyanidhi and Haridas Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Persons on that platform, that's the platform of perfection. And then the meaning of Krishna's name, we ended by saying, it's conventional meaning. It means Yasoda Nandana and Shyamasundara and Gopal. We don't need to take derived meanings of the syllables. Although Gopal Tapani, we heard, does that and ends up the same thing because Krishna is Krishna. Krish means to attract. And Na means transcendental pleasure, ananda. And you put the two together and you got Krishna, the Supreme Person, all attractive, source of everything, Krishna. That's where we ended. That was text 47. Now we're ready for text 48. So, text. Help. Oh. Okay. We said, Jiva Goswami said, the realization of Vyas has six verses. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So now we're going to look at verse 8, the fifth out of the six texts in chapter 7, canto 1, that are narrating Vyasa's realization. So I think we're ready. Let's chant together. Sa samitam bhagavatim kurvan pramya chatvajam sukham ajapayam asa nivritti niratam munihi. Translation. The great sage, Vyasadeva, after compiling Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, notice I put it in special letters, you know, edition number 2. After revising it, taught it to his own son, Shukadeva Goswami, who was already engaged in self-realization. That's this nivritti niratam. And we're going to see those terms again several times. So as we referred to way back in text number 29, that in text 48 and 49, the details of chronology of Srimad Bhagavatam being composed is laid out. Because at the end of 29, you remember that picture of Krishna coming to the hermitage of Vyas, and Vyasa's wife is sitting there, poor lady, pregnant with a child that's 16 years in her womb. How uncomfortable. Whew. And Krishna promised Shukadeva, when you come out, you won't fall prey to Maya. So please come out. So he came out. Meaning the purpose of narrating it at that point was not only he was detached from Maya in the womb, he was detached from Maya after. He didn't fall into Maya, didn't go watch television or do video games or anything like that. Okay. Srila Vyasadeva experienced, that the final goal, the bliss of pure love of God, is superior even to Brahmananda, the happiness derived from realizing the impersonal aspect of the Supreme. How do we know this? We know because Vyasadeva taught Shukadeva Goswami Srimad Bhagavatam so that he could taste a special bliss derived from love of God, even though Shukadeva was already absorbed in Brahmananda. Sutta Goswami states this in the verse 178, beginning Sa Samhitam, the one we just chanted. In this verse, the phrase Kritvanu Kramya, or after compiling and revising, indicates that Vyasadeva first wrote Srimad Bhagavatam in an abbreviated form. Now somebody was asking, Shalini, you were asking, is that abbreviated form the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam? Well, I did some research, and it doesn't say. Multiple places it makes reference to an abbreviated form. It doesn't say anything more about what that abbreviated form is. Sorry. Commonly it's understood, but I've not read it anywhere from our acharyas, that abbreviated form is the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam, which are in Canto 2, Chapter 9, text number 29 through 32. Something like that. Some people say that's the abbreviated form. I've not read it from our acharyas, so I can't say. Other than some people say. So he initially wrote Srimad Bhagavatam in an abbreviated form. And later on, after being instructed by Narada Muni, he expanded and rearranged it, thus to apparently contradictory statements are reconciled. One, found here in the Bhagavatam saying, Canto 1, Chapter 4, says that the Bhagavatam was composed after the Mahabharata. And the other found elsewhere, both Skanda Purana and also Matsya Purana says that the Mahabharata was compiled after the 18 Puranas. So it's a contradiction. How to reconcile the contradiction? You'll hear. The word nivritti, nirita, or attached to renunciation, implies that because of his absorption in the bliss of Brahman, Sri Shukadev was living a life of complete renunciation, from which he never deviated. Now, part of the commentary says there are different ways of depicting renunciation. One is indifference, another is this one, like completely attached to renunciation, not just neutral. So now, there's a reference here, and it's purposeful, to from the commentary. This is Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary that's made its way into the BBT commentary on a description about Jaimini. So who's Jaimini? You'll find in the commentary. In fact, if you have your book, you'll find it on page 184, 185. When chapter 4 of Canto 1, Vyasadeva divided the Vedas, and he entrusted different parts of the Vedas to different disciples. Jaimini was entrusted with Samaveda, and the Samaveda is like the best, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, of all the Vedas, I am the Samaveda. Jaimini was entrusted with Samaveda. Then at the bottom of page 185, I'm going to read, it is said that once, as Vyasadeva was dictating various verses to his disciple Jaimini, when Vyasadeva came to one verse from the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, Jaimini hesitated to write it down. And this is a verse that Prabhupada would quote, but Jaimini was hesitating to write it down. Matra, Svashra, Dehitrava, that verse that says, one should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat even with one's own mother, sister, or daughter. For the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, he may be attracted by sex. Your mother, your sister, your daughter. Jaimini apologized, but he could not agree that a self-realized sage might become agitated by the mere physical presence of a woman. Srila Vyasa simply smiled, and by his mystic power, suddenly turned himself into a young woman. Jaimini, attracted against his will, found himself trying to embrace the woman, who, just as suddenly, turned herself back into the not very attractive old sage, Vyasadeva. Now, why is this here in the commentary? The next paragraph. Similarly, Shukadeva Goswami played the role of an impersonalist before hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, but the truth is that he took birth on earth for the sole purpose of hearing the Bhagavatam and repeating it to Parikshit Maharaj. That's the reason this is in this commentary. Not exactly a one-to-one correlation, but Shukadeva Goswami, very special. There's other Puranic literature to describe how he's special, which we're not going to go into. But, I mean, who's like the four Kumaras, who from the time that they appeared as sons of Brahma, they were Brahman realized. Who is Brahman realized still within the womb of their mother? Not an ordinary personality. So he played that role, so to speak, and then showed how he could gradually become perfect by, as we'll hear, while he's still in the womb, he heard something about Krishna. Because his father was instructing the students and his mother was hearing sometimes the instruction to the students. So he heard something about Krishna and he became, while still in the womb, convinced that Krishna can protect one from Maya. He just has to give his blessings. So it doesn't say how he communicated from within the womb, but he communicated from within the womb to his father, Vyas. Look, I'm not coming out. Unless you get Krishna to come here and promise I won't be affected by Maya, then I'll come out. I mean, not in that kind of language, but... So Brahma Vaivarta Purana says, Vyas went 1,000 kilometers or miles or whatever it was to Dwarka and brought Krishna back. Krishna came and he promised. Then he came out. So it's a Leela. Who's what, you know, what child in the womb talks to dad? Hey dad, can you bring Krishna? Then I'll come out. That's not the way it normally goes on. Okay. Love of God, text 48, is superior to the bliss of Brahman. No. We understand that from Vyasa's realization. We understand that from Shukadeva's realization. Now here are some additional references. Rupa Goswami cites in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, even if the happiness of Brahman realization is multiplied trillions of times, it would not equal even one single drop of the ocean of bliss derived from devotional service. So, this position of Shuka, while in the stage of Brahman realization, is that he had no material attraction. Nivritti niritam. No material attraction, or alternatively, attracted to renunciation. Remember, there are these two. Not attracted to something material, neutral to the material, attached to renunciation. So, Jiva Goswami comments two things. Shukadeva Goswami was fully realized in Brahmananda, yet he became attracted to the qualities of Jita, Krishna. This means that Ajita's qualities are not material, and that the happiness derived from attachment to him surpasses that of Brahmananda. We've gone over this like 6 times. Both things are indicated. And in terms of intention, Shukadeva Goswami had no material intention to mislead his audience, Maharaj Parikshit, or anybody or anything. There's nothing in his heart that's like that. Gross or subtle. Now, this little issue, remember who Jiva Goswami's audience is. His audience is highly scholarly, well-read people, and they may be picking at a fault in Srimad Bhagavatam that says something other than what Skanda Purana and Matsya Purana says, so therefore Bhagavatam needs to be, you know, not regarded so nicely. But so he explains it. This issue of, was Mahabharata composed before Srimad Bhagavatam or after Srimad Bhagavatam? Because it appears there's contradictory things that are spoken. And here's the contradictory things. One of them is right in the Bhagavatam itself, Canto 1, Chapter 4, which says, out of compassion, the great sage, that's Vyas, thought it wise to do something that would enable those who were ignorant of how to act for their own welfare to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Therefore, or thus, he compiled the great historical narration called Mahabharata for women, laborers, and friends of the twice-born, because they do not have access to the Vedas. O twice-born Brahmanas, still his mind was not satisfied, although he engaged himself in working for the total welfare of all people. So this makes it sound like the Bhagavatam came later, after Mahabharata. And now, here's another one that says, from Skanda Purana and Matsya Purana, after compiling the 18 Puranas, Vyasadeva, son of Satyavati, composed the great history called Mahabharata, which serves as a commentary on the Vedas. So Mahabharata's composed after the 18 Puranas, including Srimad Bhagavatam, but Bhagavatam says it was composed after Mahabharata. Okay, look at this contradiction. Now we got a controversy going on. And here's the solution. There's this synopsis, Srila Vyasadeva originally composed the Bhagavatam in an abbreviated form. Whatever that was. Maybe the four Chatushloki verses or whatever it was, an abbreviated form. Then, he compiled the great history, Mahabharata, out of compassion. So he did, the 18 Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam, in an abbreviated form. Then he received instructions from Narada. And then he produced a new expanded edition. Revised and expanded from what was version number one. Edition number two. And we have edition number three, which is Shukadeva spoke it, and then Vyasadeva wrote what Shukadeva spoke. Okay? Controversy solved. Text number 49, and this ends the section. This has some important parts to it. Sa vai nivritti nirata. There's the same phrase again. Sarvatropekshako muni. This indicates he's a Shukadeva Goswami was indifferent. Sarva upekshita kashyava. Hatim etam atmarama. This is heading for the Atmarama verse, by the way. It's a hint. Atmarama sama vyasat. Translation. Shaunaka stops the narration of Sutta and asks the question, wait a minute. Sri Shukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased within his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? He was already there. He didn't have to study anything. So why did he study something? He's already at the Atmarama stage, filled with happiness. So now, next is the answer to that question, which, if you have your book, you'll find it at the bottom of page 187, the Atmaramas Chatmunayo Nirgrantha Api Arukrame Kurvanti Ahaitakim Bhaktim Iktam Bhuta Gano Hari. And in Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, includes text 11 along with text 10. And here's the translation. All different categories of Atmaramas. Shukadeva was an Atmarama. He was filled with his own happiness. And pure devotees are filled with their own happiness, and others may also be filled with their own happiness, Atmarama. All different varieties of Atmaramas, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. That's text 10. And text 11. Srila Shukadev Goswami, the son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus, presenting qualities of Lord Hari, he underwent the study of this great narration. So, Vishwanath comments, and you find it right in the commentary of Gopi Pranadana's book here. Snigrantha means their false ego is dissolved. That means prema bhakti. Because bhakti is so powerful, it can dissolve false ego. Yay! No more false ego. No more material mind, no more false ego, no more struggle. There's a price. It's faith in the hearing process. Such Nirgrantha sages retain a sense of personal identity in that perfect stage, but they transcend attachment to material ego, which is a product of Mahatattva, the energized state of primeval matter. Now that's, you know, Canto 3 subject matter, the process of creation. So how does creation come into being? It gets energized. Pradhan gets energized by the glands of Mahavishnu. And from that Pradhan, it then starts to separate out into the various elements, and the first one of them is false ego. So before even the living entities get a body and do anything, they got a false ego. And false ego gets dissolved by prema bhakti. So the message of this verse is, those who are Atmaramas, they're beyond false ego. In this beyond false ego status, they're attracted to Krishna, who's not a product of anything material. He's not an upadhi of Brahman. Sorry, Shankara. Not an upadhi of Brahman. Doesn't match Shukadeva Goswami's realization. Doesn't match Vyasadeva's realization. So we don't accept it. And we have a reason why. Besides, it doesn't make sense. Then, Shukadeva's attitude, or mati, namely his perception of bliss in the impersonal supreme, was changed by the little he had heard directly from Vedavyasa about the qualities of Lord Hari, even while still within the womb of his mother. Now, we've been over this enough times, I think the chronology should be clear. He's in the womb of his mother. This is after the instruction of Narada, after the trance of Vyas, after his revising and recompiling the Bhagavatam, so edition number 2, while in the womb of his mother, he heard some of that, and he became initially attracted to Krishna, little, initially. Then, when Shukadeva became aware that Lord Sri Krishna, whenever he desires, can dispel material illusion, he, Shukadeva, impelled his father to bring Krishna there, so that he would have a vision of Krishna, even while still in the womb, and he would get the benediction from Krishna. He'd not fall subject to Maya. So there's that beautiful painting again. Krishna came. Krishna promised. Shukadeva Goswami got up and left. This is what we hear in the fourth canto, the fourth chapter. And Vyas went chasing after him, calling out, but he only heard back the echo of his own voice from the trees. Shukadev didn't respond. And then he went into the forest. So then, Brahma Vaivarta Purana says that Vyasa sent some of his disciples who had learned some verses from him, from the Bhagavatam, and just go in the forest and recite these verses. And you see this teenage boy look stunned when he hears those verses. That's my son. Just keep chanting those verses and he'll follow you. He'll come back to the ashram. So, in the commentary, it states that it's not for certain, but some authorities say these are some of the verses that were recited. They're just describing the glories of Krishna. So this is from Canto 1, Chapter 9. Oh, just read them. Oh, King. This is spoken to Maharaj Yudhisthira. O King, that personality whom, out of ignorance only, you thought to be your maternal cousin, your mother's brother's son, your very dear friend, well-wisher, counselor, messenger, benefactor, etc., is the very personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. And then we've made reference to this a few times. Here it is again, this Aho Bhakiyam Stanakala Kutam, the verse spoken by Uddhava to Vidura about the kindness of Krishna. Alas, how should I take shelter of one more merciful than he, Krishna, who granted the position of mother to the she-demon Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. She wanted to kill Krishna. And then there's another 10th canto, chapter 21 verse, very famous verse. It describes Krishna going into the forest wearing a karnika flower over his ear and so forth. Very, very beautiful verse. You have it? Parvarupa? Oh, okay. Something else. Wearing a peacock feather ornament upon his head, I blew karnikara flower on his ears, a yellow garment as brilliant as gold, and a Vaijayanti garland. Lord Krishna exhibited his transcendental form as the greatest of dancers as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, beautifying it with the marks of his footprints. He filled the holes of his flute with the nectar of his lips, and the cowherd boys sang his glories. So they just recited these verses. Shukadev Goswami heard the verses. He was stunned and attracted, and they kept chanting and chanting and brought him back to the ashram of Vyas, where he then instructed him thoroughly in this edition number 2 of Srimad Bhagavatam, meaning after his trance of realization under Vyasa's instructions, Narada's instructions. And then again he left home, and then he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. That's the chronology found in this text 48. Little summary message. So he's been very active and diligent in showing the following. It has been shown that the speaker of the Bhagavatam, Sri Shuka, shared the same attitude as Sri Vyasa, Veda Vyasa. Therefore, in all cases, we should analyze the purport of the Bhagavatam strictly in accordance with the attitude of its speaker, not otherwise. This thing of taking a secondary meaning if it appears to say something other than the realization of Shuka and Vyas. It has to match their realization. And if it appears to say something else, then you have to take a secondary meaning so that it matches. It's a rule, a Sanskrit rule. We must conclude that any analysis that disagrees with Shukadev's ideas will only create a perverted understanding. Ed. That's that whole section, 29 to 49, 21 texts from Premeya Kanda. Now, we could pause and take questions, or I could go on and just start the next section, text 50, maybe also 51, and it's not so difficult. It gets more difficult, but it starts pretty simple. So unless I hear otherwise, I'll just carry on. So text 50, it's this next section. The overall topic is, what's the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam? Since Pramana is Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme Tattva, what's its subject matter? 50 through text 55. So, Jiva Goswami writes, to definitively establish the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, the six Sandarbhas set forth in detail the topics below, one after another, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Just as, you know, this is review, but just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained Vedanta Sutra to Prakashananda Saraswati on those terms, the Srimad Bhagavatam has those same three divisions. The whole of the Vedas have those same three divisions. The realization of Vyas has, and Shukadeva has those same divisions, and Tattva Sandarbha has those, excuse me, the Sandarbhas have those same divisions, because it's symmetry. These are the truths about Krishna in these three different categories. Here they are, Sambandha. So in the first four Sandarbhas, so the first four Sandarbhas are Tattva Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha, and Krishna Sandarbha. And they're all dealing with Sambandha. And then the next one, Bhakti Sandarbha, deals with Abhideya. That's the activities in that relationship. And then the final one is Prayojana. Jiva Goswami likes the word Priti, which means love. So Priti Sandarbha, which is same for us, prema, prema bhakti. The quality of loving affection for Krishna. And thus, the overall message and purpose of the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam is to deliver to us prema bhakti. And you just say yes. I mean, receive it. Not just buy a set, put it on your shelf. Receive the message. Then Jiva Goswami points to a very important verse, 112 Bhagavatam, second verse of the whole Bhagavatam, that says, this Srimad Bhagavatam, beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. Now here's the whole text. Dharmak projita kaita votra, etc. Now I've highlighted here vastu because Jiva Goswami highlights it in his commentary. And I'm familiar with the word vastu other than through this particular verse. Vastu means like stuff or things. In this context, it means the highest truth. Because stuff comes from the highest truth. So, completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, just like the heart of Shuka and the heart of Vyas, the Bhagavatam spoken by them completely rejects dharma that's materially motivated. Prabhupada calls it cheating religion. This Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, Krishna, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth, vastu, is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all, etc. So this verse that begins, Dharma Projita Kaitava, has these words, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu. This discusses in general terms the truth. Vastu, Krishna, sure has a relationship. Remember that discussion? Sambandha in our ISKCON context generally means there's the source of everything and everything that comes from the source of everything. And there's a relationship between everything and its source. That's how we're accustomed to hearing sambandha. However, as a literary person, there's another, the book and the subject of the book. And there's a relationship between the book and the book's subject. Remember that discussion? Sambandhi tattva. So Shukadeva Goswami had a realization. He was Brahman realized, and he had this other realization, and that other realization was Krishna. So there's the realization of Shuka and Dukkha and his realization that was in his heart. So similarly, the book and the words that convey the meaning of the book. It's technical in one sense, but he's consistent about saying it over and over again because of his audience. He's being responsible to his audience and to us. So, as Vyasa's realization and Shuka's realization had their relationship between their hearts and the subject that was in their heart, the book also. The book has a relationship between the book itself and what it describes. That's what he's saying here in this slide. So, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra, at the very outset, Srimad Bhagavatam claims to avoid distractions of material motivation. So it kind of is like, if you're interested in material things, just don't read any further. Don't waste your time. We're not even going to talk about it. You have some other interest? This book isn't for you. Essentially, Jiva Goswami writes a similar thing at the beginning of the Sandarbhas. He makes a curse. Don't read this book. It's like a bold declaration. This book isn't going to talk about those things, things that are materially motivated. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated. So that's, you know, the qualification of the reader as it is the qualification of the speaker. Now, supposing you have some material motivation, that it'll take you beyond those material motivations. The Supreme Tattva does not reveal himself to those unwilling to know him as the Supreme Person. Conversely, worldly interests like acquiring assets and knowledge for their own sake cloud one's realization of the personality of Godhead, which can then be only partial. Think about scriptures of the world and what motivates people to follow scriptures of the world or Dharma in general. They want something. You do your pious activities so that you get the fruits of your pious activities. And the fruits of the pious activities is prosperity in this world and the next. Krishna says in chapter 2, for the most part, second chapter, very beginning, there's nothing more than this. The Bhagavatam is saying just the opposite. We're not interested in that. We're interested in the something more. And if you're not interested in something more, your heart is going to be blocked from understanding the message of this text. It's the highest religious principle. beginning. It's announcing it. In contrast to Bhagavad Dharma, other religions, or excuse me, religious and philosophical teachings are less substantial. Nice image. It's like a reflection of the thing. It looks like the thing, because it's a reflection of the thing. But it's not the full brilliance of what Srimad Bhagavatam represents. And it's outstandingly special. Jiva Goswami points out the primary characteristic of the Supreme Tattva described in the Bhagavatam, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu. Vastavam Vastu could be translated as the real substance. No, the real reality with capital R. Distinguishing it from other secondary truths. While this may be a vague definition of the Supreme, Srimad Bhagavatam develops a more complete picture in its narration of 12 cantos. This is Gopi's language. But it's just, it's the initial verse just declaring what this book is about. It's about Vastavam. Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu. There are secondary truths, but they're secondary to the primary truth. The main truth that's being presented in the Bhagavatam is this one. Just like there may be a number of ornaments or jewels or something like that, Sridhar Swami comments on this 112 verse that in this opulent Bhagavatam, the object to be known is that which is of real substantial, real substance, that which is of real, should be substantial, transcendental worth. Not relative entity. So this is the one, and there's relical matters and its qualities described by Vaisheshikas. Well, many of you know Vaisheshika Prabhu. He's such a nice devotee. I've never asked him. I've always thought to ask him, do you know why Prabhupada gave you that name? Because Vaisheshika is one of the six atheistic doctrines. Ghost system of Vaisheshika, that's sometimes called the atomic theory, that's very similar to what modern scientists say, that all there is matter and the laws that govern matter. You know that one? So, Vaisheshikas go to the Vedas and analyze the elements of matter, or what is characterized here as secondary truths, neglecting the primary truth, atheistic, neglecting the controller of them, the source of them, the supreme. It's an atheistic doctrine, taking understanding from the Vedas that just deal with matter and laws governing matter, and saying that's it, that's the highest truth from the Vedas. So what Jiva Goswami is saying is that this verse 112 says, no, thank you. Those topics are presented in connection with the Supreme. Same as what this whole last section, verses 56 through 63, says. All the other topics of the Bhagavatam are presented in the Bhagavatam in such a way the connection between them and their shelter is made very clear. Whereas in other texts within the Vedas may not be so clear. The Bhagavatam makes it really clear, unmistakably, with the highest truth. Here's a nice image that depicts all of this in a visual. There's the absolute reality, and from the absolute reality, there's different expansions. There's the living entity, there's material nature, there's expansions of the Supreme Lord in his Vishnu Tattva forms. They're not standing on their own. Vaisheshika says, this is standing on its own and there's laws that govern this and that's all there is. Look, there's this verse and that verse and this subject matter within the Vedas. not connecting it to the absolute reality. The Bhagavatam does it the other way. The absolute reality is at the center, and means connecting connected with everything related to Him. The absolute reality is connected with everything related to Him. Nice. That's what Srimad Bhagavatam is, and that's what it does. That's its message. Nice. Clear? Not fuzzy? Clear? Should we end here, or should I do one more verse? One more verse. Okay, one more verse. What's the nature of this absolute reality? So we just covered 1:1-2. Now we're going to go to 1:2-11. We spoke about it this morning. Jiva Goswami asks a question, then of course he answers his own question. What's the identity or fundamental makeup of this substantial truth? Because that's the Bhagavatam's message. And initially, he starts that little journey of what's this substantial truth or what is it made up of with its absolute consciousness. The absolute truth is absolute consciousness. Not so dissimilar from what Shankara's teaching is saying, but it's not just a conscious entity, but it is consciousness as well. And he refers to this 1:2-11. Vedanta tat tattva vidas tattvam yajnanam advayam. Prabhupada is translated as non-dual substance. Advayam is non-dual. Gyanam, he's translated in his Bhagavatam as substance. And so this real nature of the absolute truth is absolute reality is Gyanam Advayam. Jiva Goswami says it's non-dual consciousness. So if you remember, Gyana means knowledge, and to have knowledge you have to have consciousness, to be conscious of something, knowledge of something. So it indicates implicit is consciousness. Should I do it again? We'll referring back, this is building blocks. So there's living entity is conscious and consciousness. Just like a lamp is luminous and illumines other things in the room or wherever it's situated. So similarly, the soul is conscious, which Shankara says Brahman is conscious, but it's also consciousness. And consciousness means conscious of things. It illumines things. So there's knowledge that become illumined because there's consciousness. So Advaita Gyan, which is non-dual knowledge, means, it implies, non-dual consciousness. That's the samasti, that's the big one. The absolute truth that has these Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan features. That non-dual truth has non-dual consciousness. That means living entity it does also. Because he's part and parcel. The original, perfect consciousness, the unity underlying all existence, that's the absolute truth, that from which everything comes, the underlying substrata of everything. Remember that word substrata? Like, the gold mine and the gold bangle. They have the same substrata. Remember that? So the living entity has the same substrata as the supreme living entity, and the supreme living entity is a substrata of everything. The floor isn't conscious, but its existence is based upon something. And that something is supreme consciousness, or non-dual consciousness. He's a lawyer, he's building his case. Let him keep going. What jnanam does not mean, particularly in this context, is consciousness devoid of what you're conscious of, or subject-object. What it does mean is that which is purely spiritual, or manifesting exclusively as living spirit. You know, conscious and consciousness, advaya jnana, that's what it does mean. That he's making a statement, and then he's going to follow his standard. He's going to give us some scripture to support it. Advayam does not deny the presence of the absolute truth in the absolute truth of transcendental form and variety. So in other words, it's a negation or refutation of Shankara's teachings that when you become liberated, you lose any individuality, form, or anything. You just become a homogeneous smoothie. Put on high speed. No variety. Nothing. That's not Vyasa's realization. It's not the statement of the Bhagavatam. It's not the right message. Rather, individuality exists according to Vyasa's realization. Individuality of the jiva exists before bewildered, while bewildered, and after bewildered. It's an eternal entity. It doesn't lose identity upon becoming liberated. It doesn't become God or become the one Brahman. That's not Vyasa's realization. It could have been written that way if that was his realization upon which the Bhagavatam was composed. We're still on text 51 and we're almost done. Why is the Supreme indicated only as consciousness? Whereas there's no mention here of bliss or pleasure. Jiva Goswami has an answer for that one too. And his answer is, from the Upanishads, well this is like confirmation, should include bliss because it says, Vijnana Anandam Brahma, that bliss is an essential quality of Brahman. Baladev answers that the word tattva, 1:2:11, implies blissfulness. Why is that? Because the primary meaning of tattva is the essence of something's being. In general, the essence of all life is happiness. Everyone strives for happiness. And for this purpose, all objects are used. And those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, this anamaya, manamaya, pranamaya, jnanamaya, and vijnanamaya, anandamaya, that's too many. Anamaya, jnanamaya, pranamaya, vijnanamaya, and anandamaya. It's mixed up. The sequence is mixed up. But anyways, even in the most immature stage of a living being's existence, they want happiness. Happiness through food, etc., etc., etc. And this is, you know, Vedic. So existence means search for happiness. So it's implied without saying it. Consciousness implies there's happiness or search for happiness. Experience of some kind of, in the mature state, that happiness is anandamaya. So it's implied. Now, the much anticipated discussion from the Buddhists. They don't agree with this. The Buddhists argue that consciousness and bliss are not permanent states of being. They're just passing moments. Whoops. Jiva Goswami refutes. the Supreme is eternal by statement and by definition. Something that isn't eternal isn't supreme. The Supreme is eternal, and therefore its state of being, or tattva, is also eternal, or self-manifesting. So as the Supreme is conscious, based upon a Shruti statement, whatever has real existence without beginning, caused by something else, must be eternal. So consciousness is also eternal. And as the Samasthi is conscious, so is the living entity. This discussion continues this evening at length. Thus, this is the last slide. The Srimad Bhagavatam conveys its own primary relationship with the Supreme Truth. What's that? The Supreme Truth is that which the Srimad Bhagavatam describes. So that's the relationship between the words of the book, or the subject of the book, and the book itself. There's a sambandha, or relationship, between the book and its subject, and the subject is the Supreme Truth, Krishna. It's academic, or it's for the satisfaction of that audience, that there's a relationship between the book and its subject, and he's trying to show them that that has been established within the text itself. No guesswork is needed. So this evening, we'll be discussing those verses mentioned, 11th canto, chapter 2, 18, 19, 20. I do recommend you read, and I do if you have your book, you can look it up in your book, because it's a little tricky. But it's analyzing the consciousness of the jiva. This has been analyzing the consciousness of the Supreme. Samasthi, the Supreme tells, knowing the Supreme tells us something about the individual or part. And then this is going to analyze the part, telling us something about the Supreme, the drop of water from the ocean. And instead of addressing Shankara's teachings, it's going to address Buddha's teachings. They say, no, it's not like that. And here's why. And then the Bhagavatam says, yes, it is like this, and here's why. Okay. How are we doing? You're still here. Any discussion?
Guru Maharaj, when you were discussing the absolute reality into three components, that is Maya, Jiva, and avatars.
Yes.
So Maya includes the external and internal energy?
Well, good question. It could be taken either way. It could be taken, this is in relation to creation, or it could be taken that it's his energy, his Maya, but then, you know, his energy includes living entities. So, I can take it either way. They certainly are, the internal energy is his expansion. It's part of him.
Another question is about the definition of Krishna that you gave in another session, that Krish means existence and Krish means existence and Na means bliss. And Krishna is the combined form of, you were
I don't follow. Say it again, slower and clearer.
You gave another definition of the word Krishna when we were discussing.
Okay.
So Krish meaning existence and Na meaning bliss.
Yeah.
So from that, do we understand that Krishna is essentially signifying Satchidananda, the existence and consciousness?
Well, he's the highest truth. That's the Krish part. The highest truth. Mm-hmm. And he's all attractive. The highest truth who is all attractive.
Okay.
Someone else? Up here in the front?
Guru Maharaj, it seems like there is a very clear demarcation between Shukadev Goswami's Brahman realization and his Bhagavan realization. And I'm wondering, in the Bhagavad Gita it says that by practicing devotional service one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta stage, and then at the Brahma-Bhuta stage one achieves pure devotional service.
Not exactly. Is your question asking, before we get some clarity about Krishna as a person, do we have to pass through this territory that there's this existence of something supreme and we have to go through that little ordeal for a while before we get to Krishna as a person?
I'm wondering what the Brahma-Bhuta stage looks like for a devotee, like for those of us practicing.
It's my understanding is, as Prabhupada described, that God realization is like the gradual rising of the sun. So in the full midday of the sun is overhead and is fully bright. And nighttime is, it's dark. Unless you're in New York City, then it's very bright. But there's the dawn. Little light in the on the horizon, the firmament, and so gradual. So there may be, like that, some appreciation of the existence of Krishna, but, you know, depending upon who you are, the understanding of what that light on the horizon is, or the little bit of appreciation of eternality, it's Krishna. Or, depending on who you are, it may be, well, there's actually something that's eternal and real beyond the temporary, or somewhere in between. So a lot depends on your personalism, what's going to strike your consciousness or what your realization will be. But it's not that you have to kind of be impersonal first before you get personal. It's progressive, like the rising of the sun. That's Prabhupada's statement.
Guru Maharaj, when was Bhagavatam written or recorded in its final form? Was it when Sutta Goswami was speaking to the rishis? I'm a little confused because the first verse of chapter 4 of first canto, it says Sri Vyas Uvacha, and Vyas Dev is speaking that Sutta Goswami is now speaking to the rishis.
I'm not really clear what your question is, nor am I really clear if I understood your question, how that works. Because I've had discussions about this topic before where I thought the question was clear, I thought I understood it clearly. In my mind, it doesn't really matter. Meaning, Vyasadeva is Trikalagya. He can know things before they happen. And he can write them down before they happen. So, for me, it's not a problem. It's more academic than it is important. So exactly what your question is, because different persons have different precision questions that differ from the next person's, I'm not really sure what the question is, but in the final analysis, it's not really so important. It's interesting, but it's not so important.
Krishna Maharaj, there was one slide which it says that Supreme is non-dual consciousness.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
What it means is yin and yang, or you know, hot and cold, and happy, sad, and pleasure, pain, and light and dark, and that's dual consciousness. And non-dual consciousness is everything is absolute. What does that mean, everything is absolute? Everything is absolute means it's all in relation to Krishna, not the feature of duality. For example, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, there's a place, a spiritual world, where there's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or electricity, everything is self-luminous. Absolute. Now, in the pastimes of Krishna, we hear about day and night. We hear about the full moon. There's a sun and there's a moon in a place where there's no need of sunlight or moonlight. So, what's going on? Well, it's absolute reality manifesting through the internal potency for the sake of Krishna's pastimes. That's what's going on. It's non-dual reality and non-dual consciousness of that reality. In fact, Jiva goes, the spiritual world, every night it's a full moon. There's no phases of the moon. Because it's for Krishna's pastimes. That's why there's a moon. There's no need of the moon. It's just for Krishna's pastimes. And for the variegatedness of Krishna's pastimes, there's the rising of the sun, and then there's midday, and there's the setting of the sun. But there's no need of that other than for Krishna's pastimes. Non-dual dham. And then there's non-dual consciousness, where nothing is seen having an existence separate from Krishna. Because when you see things existing separate from Krishna, then you get into this realm of duality. But there's nothing is seen separate from Krishna, so it's non-dual consciousness. Everything is in relation to Krishna. Everything is in relation to Krishna. It's non-dual consciousness.
Talking already about the Supreme. So Supreme is Krishna. Nothing in relation to Krishna. It is Krishna only.
So there's three features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And those that are conscious of Brahman, those that are conscious of Paramatma, those that are conscious of Bhagavan, it's non-dual consciousness in that realm. In the Brahma-jyoti, those who are fixed in trance of realization of Paramatma, they don't see anything apart from Krishna. Non-dual consciousness. So there can be diversity with non-dual consciousness. And it's not a contradiction. That's the point. There's diversity that's non-dual. Then in this realm, there's diversity that immediately implies its opposite. Light and dark, happy, sad, pleasure, pain, day and night, hot and cold. Wherever there's this, there's that. This is duality. And then there's a realm where there's non-duality. That there's diversity in that realm of non-duality because everything is centered on Krishna or that absolute consciousness in the case of Brahman-realized persons. Non-dual consciousness. Not attracted by the impermanent happiness, not repulsed by the impermanent unhappiness. Non-dual consciousness. Absolute consciousness.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Maharaj, Krishna by nature is very kind. And in fact, his kindness and mercy is the only thing we can depend upon. So, like a person can change his nature, I wonder if Krishna can change his nature as well. Okay.
Yes. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, in a discussion with him, he shared that he asked Prabhupada, is it, you know, the question you're asking? And Prabhupada's answer was, the spiritual world is not static. It's ecstatic. He didn't elaborate. But, you know, then in that case, the change is not a material change, it's an ecstatic change. It's a transformation of ecstasy change. For the pleasure of Krishna. Not, oh, I'm not so happy with this one, I want the happiness of that one. It's not, that's material. Mm-hmm. For the happiness of Krishna only.
My question is, will Krishna change his nature?
Will Krishna change his nature?
Yes.
Oh. What's the right word? It's a misleading question. Because Krishna is everything. There's nothing that Krishna is not. Krishna is everything. Within Krishna is everything. So the question itself is misleading. He may exhibit this, and then withdraw this and exhibit that, and then withdraw that and exhibit something else. But within Krishna is everything. So he doesn't change his nature. So the question is misleading. He doesn't change his nature. He may exhibit this and exhibit that for his pleasure and not for, you know, not because he needs something or somebody needs something, for his pleasure.
So
it's his nature.
Like,
he doesn't change his nature.
His kindness and his
well, that's not so. That's not changing.
It's just
his nature. So are your question saying is at some point that Krishna is going to change his nature and not be kind anymore? Is that what you're asking? Oh. No. Okay, now I understand your question. I didn't understand your question at first. It's his nature. He's kind. Now, he may do some things that look like, whoa. But that's kindness. Because his nature is kind. Yes, and when you're done in the back. Go ahead.
Maharaj, it's just for my understanding. One of the slides, first, absolute truth is consciousness, and then there was a question that why pleasure is not included.
Yes.
Then as an answer, the answer was...
Tattva means the existence of something. And the existence of all things is pleasure. All things are seeking, or pleasure-seeking entities. And that's derived from the nature of Krishna, who is a pleasure. So to say the word tattva, it includes pleasure. Does that answer your question? No? Yes?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. Just one little word caught my attention was that phrase that was quoted that had Brahman means pleasure, something like that.
Well,
so bliss as an essential quality of Brahman. Is this Brahman that we understand as the Brahman platform, that one of the partial realizations, or Brahman here means Krishna as absolute reality, that kind of...
Well, it's an incomplete manifestation. Brahman is an incomplete... Brahman is one of the aspects of the absolute truth that's not a complete manifestation of the absolute truth. And therefore, the happiness of Brahman is not a complete happiness.
There is some happiness.
Yes. as we heard Rupa Goswami say, it's, you know, 10 million times. It doesn't even equal the happiness of a drop. But there's some happiness. And it has a name, Brahmananda. In the back, would you like to take the microphone? And then Mataji, and then we're done.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So Maharaj, we were saying about absolute truth, avatars, maya, and jivas.
So the absolute truth,
like different expansions, jiva
has different expansions. That yeah. Same chart that he's he
yes,
liked.
Okay. Same chart. So there we are talking about avatars separately. Are those avatars not part of absolute truth?
No, it's not that they're everything is part of the absolute truth. Just like the radiance from the sun is also the sun. So Krishna expands as Vishnu Tattva forms. So we're not saying the Vishnu Tattva forms are not part of the absolute truth. They're expansions of Krishna. Okay? Same as living entities. Living entities aren't the supreme, but they're not separate from the supreme. They're expansions of his Tattva Shakti.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Last question over here.
Guru Maharaj, in the sadhana stage, we are impacted by lobha, moha and bhaya. Is it because of the influence of maya or just we turn away
yes,
from Krishna?
Yes, it's a diseased condition. When you have a disease, you have an illness, there's health, and there's illness. When you have an illness, you experience symptoms. And then based upon the symptoms, you can tell what the illness is. So there's symptoms of the illness. Shoka moha bhaya. And the root of that disease is having turned from Krishna. So the root of the remedy is to turn again to Krishna. So there may be different ways of helping an individual to turn again to Krishna. And then that relieves one of the symptoms of the disease. And then eventually they're completely gone because one is completely healthy and that is in the prema stage. Does that address your question?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you.
So the goal is not just relieving yourself of symptoms. That's negation. That's impersonalism. That's selfishness and impersonalism. And God-centeredness is satisfaction of Krishna. Automatically the symptoms are mitigated. Up to the root. So that's our objective in bhakti. Okay. Again, congratulations for Steele being here through all of this. And we'll continue this evening with this second of the two sections, second of the three sections, understanding the Supreme by understanding the individual, because we spend some time understanding the individual by understanding the Supreme. This non-dual consciousness of the Supreme is a symptom of the individual in its purified state. The covered state, living entities experienced, Krishna doesn't experience. Because maya is under his control. But when we're controlled by maya, covered by maya, then that non-dual consciousness is diminished or held in abeyance or kept in a seed-like stage. So the practice of bhakti awakens that and then displaces the ignorance. Shoka moha bhaya. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.